Hey, folks, in this interview, I'm sitting down with Mr. Andy Biggs. We're going to be talking about storytelling in photography.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, I'm talking with Andy Biggs, world traveler extraordinaire. We're going to be talking about storytelling in photography and a bunch of other things that sort of circulate around that, as well as some new things that he's working on in his travel photography business. Andy Biggs, welcome to the show, man. What's going on?
Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
I know. Way it is. Long. Yeah, life Way happens, right? It's been... it's been a minute or two. I think last time we spoke, you had an afro or something. Now it's gone.
Yeah, I haven't had hair in 10 years, my friend.
I know. I'm kidding. So let's catch up. So what's yeah. going on in your world? You know, what's changed in your photography life? And, you know, are you still enjoying the world of clicking the shutter?
Oh, well, that will never go away. I love taking photographs. But, you know, from a photographic tourism standpoint, I've evolved a little bit, and it's difficult to sell more and more time, more hours, and traveling overseas. So I'm basically augmenting my business and sending people on safari in Africa, and where I've got a ground crew in each country. They'll take care of you and take you to the best sites. So now I'm setting up more custom safaris specific for your needs, whether you're one person, four people, or maybe a camera club or a family. So that's what I'm doing a little bit different in my business, but I'm still guiding. I'll never quit that.
Yeah.
And I love taking photographs.
That is too cool. So I could call you up and say, hey, Andy, I want to go to Botswana or wherever, you know, or do you have a set list of locations where you could send me to, or do I just throw a dart at the map and say, I want to go there and you make it happen?
It's a little of both. I would say that there are very common places that people want to go because they have very, very good brands. If I say like the Serengeti of Tanzania,
yeah.
Wildebeest Migration, the Maasai Mara, I want to go see mountain gorillas, Andy. Those are very, very repeatable places to send people to. But every now and then someone will say, hey, listen, I really want to do a self-drive trip and have somebody at each location in Namibia. I want to go photograph big sand dunes. Can you help me out? Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm setting up those kind of trips quite a bit these days.
That's
nice. It's really cool. And it's making a lot of guys on the ground in Africa very happy because they've got more work, because for years, I don't want to say I've been a competitor to them, but I've kept all the business to myself.
Well, it sounds like an evolution of this sort of traditional photography workshop where, you know, you meet your group, you have like a meet and greet, and then the next morning you're on a bus or something and you're out and you're shooting dinner that night, rinse and repeat, you know, and then... Yeah. You know, it sounds more like you're releasing the reins and allowing those people to kind of go out and explore and experience these places on their own without a net for the most part, right?
Yeah, but that's an evolution of the market. You know, the market has been, I would say it was very immature when I started in 2002. Mm-hmm. I was in very early. I was helping people. I was organizing trips to places that people really had no idea how to put a trip together. And for the most part, that's still the same. But people need less and less photographic instruction, I found. What they want more is either the camaraderie aspect or maybe just a little bit of coaching over their shoulder to say, hey, here's what's going to happen. Get ready for the shot. Here are some sample settings maybe to check out. Mm-hmm. And they're less interested in the, hey, let's work on Lightroom at the end of the day, or, you know, with a beer and just kind of go through images. That's becoming less and less useful for people. Mm-hmm. Now people want to explore at their own pace with their own budget and perhaps with people like their family members or a significant other that aren't into photography at all. They just want to go. Oh, and so yeah. That's actually a big chunk of my business now. You know, there's a lot of supply of people running trips now. And it's been this way, I would say, for probably 5 or 7 or 8 years. And that really hasn't affected my decision. It's been more of, you know, I've been traveling hard for 17 years for 20 plus weeks a year. And at some point you say, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, I turned 50 this year. It's time for me to, you know, change the business model a little bit so that I can actually enjoy, you know, life a little bit other than being gone all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, missing
my family.
You do one thing enough, you know, you can get sick of anything. Like you love steak, but if you have it every night, you know,
I don't know.
You can get sick of it. I know, me too.
No, I love what I do. It's more of, I'm trying to find a balance.
And yeah.
That's always.
Well, it's an evolution too, right? Thing. Yeah. It's balance.
All
and
businesses.
Because you're changing, yeah. The market's changing, people's tastes are changing. You're just sort of keeping at the cusp and the zeitgeist of what people are looking for.
And, you know, the ironic part in all of this is that as I decided to start being an agent and setting up more of these safaris, all of my competitors that I've been competing against in the marketplace are now all my customers. So I'm setting up safaris for groups. And it's good. Actually working out great. Yeah.
Oh, so you're like, yeah, so that's like the photographers, the photographer that wants to run a travel workshop can come to you and say, hey, I want to do a travel workshop to fill in the blank, and you handle the rest of it. They take the credit, you guys split the fee or whatever, they pay your fee or whatever. Totally. And we got to talk.
I actually don't charge a fee. That's the beauty of this industry, especially like, so I set up a lot of trips in Africa, but also India, Bhutan, and other places around that region that, you know, I get compensated by the properties, not by the people that want to buy it. Yeah. So there's no charge, you know, markup or anything like that on any trip that I set up.
So let me get this straight. Mm-hmm. So I'm a photographer. I run this thing called This Week in Photo. If I decided I want to do this week in photo workshops, and I want to send people to, you know, I don't know, somewhere in Ethiopia or someplace like that, you know, or let's make it even easier. Someplace that you've already been to and you've got relationships established there. I call you up and say, Andy, I want to do a workshop on these dates. And then I fill the workshop. The onus is on me to fill the workshop. You do all the logistics. Everybody's happy. I charge whatever the heck I want to charge. You get paid on the back end from the venues, et cetera. Yeah. And everybody's happy. That's how it works?
That's exactly how it works. But actually, it's a little more it's a little simpler than that, because if I have a relationship with you and we're friends, I might be marketing the trip for you.
Well, how do I get to be Andy Biggs' friend? I mean, how do
you know, we've been friends for over a decade. I think we can do this.
I know we have. Yeah, I've known you for quite a while. Back when we had back when we had a normal government, I think I knew you way back then.
That's normal.
I know there's no such thing as normal. Yeah. Well, cool, man. So let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about storytelling and the sort of the missing X factor. And from my standpoint, I know you're sitting in the middle of this stuff, you know, running those running trips, and, you know, we'll talk a little bit about your bag company as well, but you're in this world. So, you know, this as well as I do, that a lot of photographers, advanced amateurs, and, you know, amateurs, and maybe even some pros, are lacking the storytelling elements in their work. In other words, here's a shot of a pretty picture. Here's a shot of a pretty picture with a bee pollinating on it, you know, and that's it. How do we go beyond that bee to telling the story, you know, of that bee or of that flower?
So I don't know how to answer that other than I'll just tell you my approach and what I teach people, and it might help them. But, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is that people take photographs literally. For the most part, they say, you know, let's say you're a sports photographer. There's a pitcher on the mound in baseball, and he's going to throw the pitch, and people photograph that. And it's very literal. It's what's obvious. And that's a challenge, because it just doesn't transcend. It doesn't really tell you what's going on. So often what people will do is they'll take that one photograph that hangs on the wall, you know, above their fireplace, and that's really what they're after. But sometimes they should consider taking a body of work to illustrate a story. It might be 5 photographs, it might be 15, it might be 200. The average coffee table photo book has about 125 photographs in them. Okay. So it just it's just you have to get that out of you.
Yeah.
And my idea is that I take photographs of adjectives, not of things. Okay, so photography, by definition, is photographies, writing with light. But the problem with that is it's just, that's really all it is. And so I try to use adjectives. What that's done for me is that it keeps my photography consistent over time. And as I am out in the field taking photographs, whether it's 2005, 2015, or 2020, hopefully those photographs have links together. So what I do is I have a list of adjectives that are in my mind all of the time. I'm trying to look for photographs that are positive, uplifting, hopeful, regal, heroic, timeless, remote, and those are all connected. So I'm primarily an African wildlife photographer. So let's say that I'm photographing a pride of lions. I can photograph them sleeping. I can photograph one when they put, let's say a male puts his head up, wind in his face. That's heroic. It's very regal. It's positive. It's uplifting. Then all of a sudden, let's say he snarls. Well, that gets aggressive. Mm-hmm. That kind of, throw that out. I'm not going to shoot then. I want these more, positive, mm-hmm. let's say, adjectives. And those are the ones that I choose and I string together. So if you look at my photographs, I'm trying to tell a story to you of a slice of reality. It's not the whole picture, that nature is beautiful. It's in harmony. It's peaceful. It's heroic. And that's just my selling. I'm selling you a concept, an idea. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that storytelling has nothing to do with subject, has nothing to do with color or black and white. It has nothing to do with shooting style. That just evolves downstream of those adjectives.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, so when I'm on safari and I'm teaching people how to photograph, I'm like, hey, listen, don't be so literal. Don't just grab one subject in front of your lens and shoot it. You've got trees here. You've got grass. You've got rocks. You've got other animals. You know, just because that animal isn't eating the other animal doesn't mean you shouldn't include the other animal.
Yeah.
You know, it's think of a photograph or a scene. It's flat or it's three dimensional, but really it's like a stage. Everything in that photograph needs to be there for a purpose. And there's an implied relationship between all elements inside that scene, inside that photograph. It's up to you as the photographer to include or eliminate using wide angle lenses or zooms and your shooting position to include or exclude. And then to position those subjects in the scene that tells the story. And I put the adjective at the very top.
That's fantastic. Like
it's not that difficult. So once I teach this to people and they go, oh, okay, I'm not as sold on it as you are, Andy. It's mm-hmm. just fine.
Yeah.
Let's just go out. Let's take some photographs. So maybe they're going to photograph a flower differently. Maybe they're going to photograph a person, a portrait differently than they did before. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to push people to do something different. And this brings another topic. A friend of mine used to be a photo editor for National Geographic coffee table books.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that, you know, when we put these books together, we're pulling from so many sources of stock photography. We're not commissioning photographs to be included in the book. So I have to take what's given to me. And I put everything into seven categories. And if I can find all my photographs in seven categories, I'm going to be able to assemble a book where when you turn the page, the next page doesn't look like the last page. There's no visual monotony. So he says, an opener, a closer, a wide angle and a zoom, a portrait, a macro shot, and a special moment. And a special moment is defined as like a moment in time that'll never happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So those seven photographs need to be shot both in horizontal and vertical. So now you have 14 photographs. And think about those while you're thinking of adjectives at the same time.
These kinds of conversations are the kind of conversations that completely alter you know, they generate those gotcha or that epiphany, aha moment of, okay, here's a different way to think about my photography that really sort of racks the focus a little bit tighter. So that's awesome. I never thought about it from two standpoints of having a finite list of adjectives in your head that you're shooting towards that define the way that you want to interpret the world. And then secondly, taking that vertical axis and turning it horizontal and turning it into a stage and saying anybody that I allow on the stage has to be there playing a role. You don't just have a car sitting on the stage for no reason. It's there for a reason, right?
Yeah, and you know, if you go look back to like college days where you went to art history classes, we had these discussions around dominant and subdominant subjects, you know, supporting actors, supporting actresses, and everything should play a role in that scene. And it's up to you as the photographer to include them or exclude them. You know, one of the biggest things that drives me crazy is people start resorting to gimmicks or shooting styles to replace good storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and we went through that stage where everybody had to have a freaking tilt shift lens.
Yeah.
And they it's
everything was miniature and then HDR as well, right?
Okay, but you know, the story still needs to be there.
Yeah.
You know, you can't replace story with something else. It's just the, you know, HDR. Oh God. You know, we went through that early stage where people just went so crazy. And, you know, let's go inside of a dilapidated building and start taking photographs. Woo-hoo, you know, yeah, crack clean paint on the wall. And at the end of the day, it's still just that. It's just, it's literal. It's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think at one point there, HDR became the equivalent of the velvet painting with fluorescent paint on it. You know, it was that, and it evoked the same kind of feelings, you know, the garage sale of the Black Panther with the glowing eyes. Right. You remember those? And now, but yeah, you know, I mean, in the defense of HDR, it's a tool in the toolbox, right? So if used improperly, you can screw something up. But if used properly, you don't even know it's there. You don't even know it was used, right?
Remember, it just supports your storytelling. That's all it is. It's just a tool. You know, and I think I kind of went off the deep end when that technology came out 10 years ago. And I think I was on Twitter at that time. And I said something like, you know, I said HDR is a lot like riding a scooter. It may be fun, but you don't want your friends to see you doing it.
We can say that about a lot of things.
Yeah. And I got a little heat for that because it made me, I think I projected the wrong, my opinions on this. It's just a tool.
Yep.
And if it's used wrong, you're not supporting your story and how you're trying to build a bigger part of work. You know, maybe I take my photography too seriously.
I don't think that's possible. Honestly, I don't think it's possible to take your photography too seriously. I mean, I think, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on this along the same vein of motivations for why people shoot. Right. So and I ask a lot of guests this, and that's the idea of why do you shoot? Are you shooting for therapeutic, you know, reasons? Are you shooting because you're trying to enlighten a particular topic in the public eye? Or on the other side of the scale, are you shooting for thumbs ups and likes, you know, and those guide your photography? On the thumbs up and like side, you know, it's like I the analogy I use is the koi pond. You're like, oh, they like this kind of bread. Let me throw some more of that in there and they eat it up, right? Like this kind of photo. I'm going to make more of that kind of photo because they seem to like that versus just telling a story and feeding your own soul. Where do you fall on that?
Well, I love to ask that question on these trips. And so I think the answers have changed over time.
Yeah.
What I'm getting on my, you know, nature kind of centric trips is more people are getting into conservation and they are using the camera to tell a story to educate other people. And the other part is maybe guys come on trips. I say guys because it's the answer is very guy. But sometimes guys just love gear. They just want to use the gear, you know, they just want to click and know all the buttons.
Yeah. And nothing wrong with that. You know, nothing, say, if that's your thing, nothing wrong with that. Right?
Everybody has enjoyment. I mean, I bet you if I poured a few more glasses of wine and asked the question again, I might get more honest answers, like I'm just trying to get away from my spouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, it was just sad, but it's I don't really get a lot of deep thought. I'd say answers that are like, you know, this is what I'm trying to say from an artistic standpoint. I think people are, from my customers, are usually just saying, hey, I love nature. I want to go take photographs. It makes me happy to be there.
Yeah. And that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, that's the therapeutic side of it. You know, you're feeding your own soul. You're not doing this for anybody but yourself. You love doing it. You know, you're a dentist during the day and you don't want to see teeth on the weekend. So you're out photographing and you love photographing. You know, it's the furthest thing away from this other thing that you have to do as possible. So you do it. Right. So how do people move more towards more? But, you know, even taking the therapeutic side out of it, how do they move more towards away from shooting for likes and thumbs up and more towards telling actual stories, and who cares if anybody likes my stories or not? You know, I'm going to tell them because it's important to me.
Yeah. Get off social media.
Yeah.
There's your answer right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take photographs. Don't share them. Don't share them until you're done.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a little bit of the bane of a creative person, is that we're never, ever, ever happy. We go back and look at our work 5 years ago and think, oh God, oh, why would I ever show people that, right?
Exactly.
And so we're always pushing ourselves, you know. But at some point, you have to put the stake in the ground and say, okay, it's time to show somebody this work. It's I'm ready. And yeah, it's hard to, like, in my own photography, I'm answering the question for myself.
Yeah, perfect.
In my own photography, I probably am happy with 3 to 5 photographs per year, max.
Wow.
And the other ones are just tools to help project what I do for a living and how you can participate in what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I take this really, really long approach using the adjectives. Remember that? I'm using these adjectives to try to arrive at some sort of portfolio of images that I personally am proud of. I turn the page and a portfolio and I go, wow, that was a great day. I remember that. I had those people in my vehicle with me. We were talking about these really deep topics and this nature of event happened in front of me. We took some photographs and that was great. And so I'm personally motivated by, yeah, that's a nice creative photograph, but also the story and the link all together. And it was a good moment. It was a good moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That was a cool photograph, but the moment sucked.
Yeah. The photograph is a photograph is a bookmark in time, right? So that you can go back and experience that point again. You said you just turned 50, or did you just turn 50? You're turning 50.
2 months.
Do you remember back in the day, Schoolhouse Rock, Unpack My Adjectives? You remember that? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unpack my adjectives. Verb was one of them. And what was another one? I'm just a bill. You know, remember all?
Conjunction, junction. What's your function?
Yes. Yeah. Good. Good. I'm not the only one that remembers. Good.
No.
All right. Well, cool, man. Let's switch gears. I want to talk about the other part of your business. So we talked about, or one of the other parts, we talked about the workshops and the sort of concierge service that you're doing, but also you have a line of very popular photography bags because you didn't have enough to do with the other stuff, right?
So, no kidding.
So tell us, for the people that may not know about these bags, tell us the brand and why you built that side of the company.
Yeah. 10 years ago, I started a company called Gura Gear, GURAGEAR. And we made really, really lightweight bags on the market. And these bags, like this one right here, weighs under 4 pounds, and it holds a ton of camera gear. We brought this to the market and it became very popular, and it were definitely targeted towards nature photographers or wildlife nature photographers. And a few years later, there was an opportunity to buy Tamarack out of bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. So Gura Gear got pushed into the world of Tamarack to try to rebuild the Tamarack brand name. And as of last year, it was decided, hey, let's bring Gura Gear back to the market. Let's split it back out and let it flourish again. Mm-hmm. So that was December of last year. We brought out three different camera bags, three different sizes, a big one that's 30 liters for big, huge cameras and lenses. We brought out a medium size, which is for smaller SLRs and mirrorless cameras. Mm-hmm. And it will hold a laptop up to a 15-inch MacBook Pro. And then we brought out a little tiny guy, this little guy, 16 liters.
Oh, look at that.
And yeah, it's tiny. And this one is really for mirrorless cameras and a 13-inch MacBook Pro on the side here. And it holds iPads. And the whole idea around this is that they're lightweight, really, really well built with the best materials possible, made out of sailcloth material that people use in racing yachts. And it's got a butterfly design. So it's got two different sides that you can open and have cameras with lenses attached on either side.
And that design language, that's the same design language that all of the Gura Gear bags have, right? That kind of dual flap feel,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we call it the butterfly design. So this has been really a labor of love, extremely high cost of manufacturing. So our prices are higher than others in the marketplace. But customers absolutely love these. And it's also a little bit of a business problem because they're so well built, they don't come back and buy more.
That's the GoPro problem.
They don't fall apart. But there's some new products coming out on the market pretty soon. And so the line is expanding. And so that place in the market has been underserved for years before we came around.
Yeah.
You know, this high quality, very low weight, durable camera bag, but also that does something different. And having this butterfly design, two different sides, because, you know, in the past, you go buy a bag and you have to unzip this huge zipper all the way around. The tongue opens up. And then you have to put your camera that's attached to a lens down the middle. And then you have to shoehorn everything else around it. That's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
So why not just shift it over to the side and you can have more than one camera attached to a lens all ready to go at the same time. So that's how we solved it.
Who knew? Who knew? Look at that logic. Applying logic to camera bag design.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. It's like you live out in the Bay Area. I used to live there. I used to be a project manager doing software consulting. And, you know, it's just an exercise in using your brain.
Testing,
making designs, testing the market, asking what's going on, make a few, sell them, see what happens, get feedback, make changes, don't make changes, order more.
Love it. Rinse and repeat, right? So what happened to Tamarack? Is the Tamarack brand still going, or did you end of life that one, or where is it?
No. Tamarack is still going. It just has a smaller product portfolio than it did when we bought them out of bankruptcy. That part of the market is still very valuable. It's still in retail outlets all around the world, you know, places like Best Buy or you know, your big camera stores. And so it serves a very, very, very different area of the market. More SKUs, not a focus on lightweight, more focus on solving specific, you know, gear that you have or specific use cases of that gear. You know, I want to carry it. I want to carry it here. I want to carry it here. I want to put it on my back. I want a fanny pack, whatever. So that market is still strong. And this Gura Gear market is just a different slice. You know, I would like to call this the photocrat market. You know, these are your folks that have really, really nice camera gear that pay attention to quality, are willing to spend more and get more and get a lot more.
Yeah.
So this sailcloth material costs, I was doing the numbers, it's like 6 to 7 times the cost per square yard than the stuff that your regular camera bags are made from.
Wow. Wow.
So that's just the fabric.
That bag seems like the type of bag that people buy that don't want to buy another bag. Right? It's like investing in a good tripod. If you invest in a good tripod versus a cheap one, you're going to rebuy that cheap one multiple times. You're going to keep that good one for a long, long, long time. Same with these bags, right?
Yeah. And what's happening here is that originally I came out with one bag. It was 32 liters. Then eventually that moved into having three different sized backpacks. Well, cameras have changed in 10 years. More and more people are selling off their SLRs and moving to mirrorless camera systems. And so those mirrorless cameras and also the lenses are moving into smaller and smaller footprints. So yeah, the bags needed to change to accommodate those. So, yeah, and that's, you know, the nature of the business. So we just changed how the volume is used. So like this one right here is a 22 liter. It actually came down from a 26 liter and is not as deep to accommodate a laptop in the back because people just really want to carry one bag. You can see I've got this African name tag on here.
I see that.
Cool. Yeah, I use my gear. So that's what's going on. People are using smaller and smaller cameras. They're not buying portrait grips or battery grips as often. They're not buying these big Nikon D5s, 1DX Mark IIs anymore. I mean, they are, but not in the same numbers.
Yeah.
So we've skewed the product range to address that kind of shift in the marketplace.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, listen, this is fantastic, man. You're an inspiration because you're doing so many things and you're doing so many things successfully. you make the rest of us look bad and sick, you know, because you're
successfully racking up frequent flyer miles.
Well, there you go. That too. If people want to learn more about the workshops that you're helping assemble and, mm-hmm. and the trips and all that stuff, where's the place on the web where they can go to find out more about that?
My name, andybiggs.com. That's the easiest place to find me for my trips, my photography, that kind of stuff. I'm on Instagram like everybody else. I'm the global photographer, all one word. And right now I'm going through a brand change. So the website will change a little bit over time to talk less about the trips with me and maybe trips with others or the services that I provide you as a traveler. Hey, you don't have to come with me if you don't want to, but I'll still participate and setting it up for you. And I have everything all laid out. You just have to get on a plane.
I love that. That's so enticing. It's such a good idea too, because that's the whole point of going on a workshop for a lot of people is it's the logistics of setting it all up, the travel piece of it, the safety. Like, yeah, I want to go to that area, but I don't want to, you know, I want to come back with all the limbs that I left with, you know. So you want to take all that out of the mix. And it sounds like you're the person that's helping take all that stuff out of the mix so people can go to these exotic locations and come back with all of their limbs and some good photos, right?
You know, the challenge that I found is that people don't know what they don't know, and yeah, they don't know how to articulate that. They say, gosh, you know, people in life make decisions out of either love or fear, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to be making decisions out of fear. You want to make them from the love side. Like, I love myself. I love my time out of nature. I want to go on a trip. As opposed to, I want to go, but I'm fearful of going because I don't know what I don't know. Mm-hmm. So that's where I bridge the gap. I'm here to help. You know, I do this all the time.
Love it.
All the time.
Love it. Yeah. Once or twice you've done this. Once or twice. Yeah. And if people want to check out the bags, either the Tamarack brand or the Gura Gear brand, where should they go? Yeah.
So two different websites. They're split apart. Same parent company. GuraGear.com. GuraGear. Gura is a made up name. It has an insinuation of guru without saying guru. Mm-hmm. It's guragear.com. And then Tamarack is still around, TAMRAC.com, for the other side of business. So two totally different brands that need different kind of loving.
Do you know the different kind of love? Do you know the origin of the Tamarack name?
I don't.
Neither do I. I'm asking. I don't know.
Yeah. Now we bought the company, but the owners were not around.
They were gone. They were tamaracked. Well, yeah. Well, cool, man. That's awesome. Congratulations again on all your success. Fantastic photographer, fantastic entrepreneur, and world traveler, or global, was it? Global photographer. Okay, got it. The global photographer.
Or the, depending on.
Let's go with the. Let's go with the. Cool. Andy Biggs, man, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you today.
Thanks. It's been too long. Thanks for having me.
I know. It will not be this long again. So, yeah, trust me. All right, man. Take care.
is TWIP.